So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And today we'll be talking about our CES 2021 preview, which that show begins next week. You know, we've been working hard to prepare for it. Nothing else is happening, right? Right? Let me just, let's just get into the podcast. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. You can also email us at podcast@engadget.com. Please join us Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern when we record the show live, too. You can join us for a Q&A and chat with us, and we'll answer some of your questions. So let's talk about CES, right? Right?
Yeah, no, I was in the middle of CES when all this went down.
And by all of this, I think Sherlyn means the attempted coup on American democracy by right-wing extremists and Trump supporters. That was a strange thing to see on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's talk a bit about what happened, because I'm not sure about all of you listening, but as these events started to unfold and we saw protesters approaching the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and we saw them getting into conflict with the police, and then all of a sudden the line was breached and they were just on the building, breaking through doors, busting open windows. It was an insane thing to watch, and it made me realize just how, just how far we've kind of fallen as a country and what extremism is doing to so many people in America right now. But it's also, it was just wild. So let's talk about what's happening here. A lot of this is actually down to tech, even though there's a lot of explanations here, right? And we're not a political podcast, so I can't really dive into the nitty-gritty of the reasoning behind this. But what I can tell you is, we can report the news. And here's what we know so far. Among these right-wing extremists who invaded the Capitol, here's what we know. Afterwards, four people died following the coup. One woman was shot by police. There were three medical emergencies. There's not much more detail from that. This is the first time the Capitol building was invaded since the War of 1812, and that was by British soldiers in 1814. They burned down the Capitol. It's kind of astounding. Like, we're even during the Civil War, right? The Civil War flag did not make it to the Capitol, but Trump supporters still managed to do it. 30 people were arrested after curfew, which for some reason included Washington Post journalists. And from what I saw and from the footage I saw, it also seemed like cops were just letting all these extremists out of the building, like letting them walk out, holding the door open for them. It is an astounding thing to see. It didn't seem like arrests were happening right then. I did see last night that the FBI put a call out to anybody, basically to the internet, to say, can you help us identify who these people are? And Twitter got into action immediately. I'm sure Reddit is going to be a big part of that. Yeah, but this is just a crazy, crazy situation. And this all kind of started Wednesday morning when President Trump got in front of his supporters who had gathered to protest the presidential nomination of Joe Biden, right? And they falsely believe there was fraud. It's something Trump has been saying for a while. This is exactly why they gathered. And they were there to force Congress people not to vote to confirm this presidency. And what's weird is that during that speech, Trump basically left them with, please, confront the Capitol, basically. He told them he'd be watching. He literally incited this mob to invade the Capitol. And I think because of that, or at least one of those reasons, is why he was later punished on social media by both Twitter and Facebook, because he started sharing on both platforms. He shared a video that called the election results fraudulent, which both Twitter and Facebook have been putting up warnings about that. He called those supporters his very special people. And he tweeted this as the riot, as they were actually invading the Capitol. So I think that was the last straw for both of these companies. Twitter said that they would, so what they first of all did is that they blocked those specific tweets, the ones with the video, and they suspended his account. So he couldn't tweet anymore. There was a Twitter announcement that said if he removed the tweets, he could tweet after 12 hours, but future violations could, you know, could mean a permanent suspension of his account, which is something a lot of people have been calling for, you know, since before he became president. So that is certainly an interesting thing to see. Facebook ended up blocking Trump's account for 24 hours, and Instagram did as well, citing two violations, which included that video. So that is sort of like the aftermath we saw on these online platforms. But I think what really struck me is that this is a very online coup attempt, right? There's just a lot happening here. It's driven by social media. It's driven by our instant connectivity. Let me just tell you a statement here, because I think it's kind of interesting, just to put this in perspective. Paul Barrett, deputy director of the NYU Stern Center for Business and Human Rights, said in a statement, "Facebook and Twitter did the right thing. Better late than never. Trump has violated the platform's rules by spreading disinformation about election fraud and inciting violence. This kind of harmful content should have no place on social media services that protect their users and society at large." So, Sherlyn, after all of this, I'm not sure like where exactly you fell on Twitter should kill Trump's account, you know, or should we just keep censoring him like whenever he does bad things? Which, if you look at his Trump as his Twitter account right now, it is just a straight line of warnings like this is disputed. This is, you know, he's lying, basically. Where do you come down on what's happening now?
I think one of the things that happened was as the riots were happening and as a siege was happening, mm-hmm. people were calling on Trump to do something, say something, to get these people to leave. And that's his platform for talking to them. Twitter, yeah, Facebook, yeah. That's how he reaches people. And that's the video he posted, which is, "We love you. You're very special. Go home in peace." Yeah. And but it
did
was
he
a
say
very
go home in peace.
He did. But it was a mixed message kind of video where this first half of it he spent blaming, you know, everything sort of still on the, you know, so-called stolen election, and it just not everyone who really supports him would know what to take away from that. And it's that sort of like unclear messaging, I think, that finally it really pushed him over the line and made Twitter and Facebook do what they did. So in that situation, I think that the suspension makes sense, because if you're not going to, you know, stand up against all of what's happening definitively, like the way some other politicians have, and you're going to say these things that continue to perhaps possibly incite violence some more, then they have a responsibility to stop it. This is people's lives. This is stuff that's at stake. I don't think a lot of people understand what happened here either.
Do you think Twitter should have just blocked his, like, ended his account earlier? Because it's not like this is the first time this has happened. He's been doing this since the beginning of his presidency, right? Like, this is the online president. This is a guy who basically came to power because of his ability to manipulate media and online conversation, especially his Twitter account, and just really rally people, you know, with his message. Yeah. Do you think it was too late for Facebook and Twitter to do something like this?
I mean, I think it was definitely, like, it should have come sooner. But that's my point of view. I want to say that, like, Twitter and Facebook, companies like those, are also under tremendous pressure from, like, people on the other side. And so they would get really mad,
What's
too.
The other side?
Being the people who support Trump, right? Like, the people who are his supporters
the ones who
are
claim
like,
that, yeah,
how dare
social media
you?
Is always against them, even though we have documented evidence of both Facebook and Twitter kind of going to extreme lengths to appease conservative and right-wing voices too, right? Like, it is very frustrating to see them whining about this when they're the ones these companies often, you know, just stumble over to try to appease, basically.
It's just funny what the limits were, right? I think this is what it took to push.
This is what it took.
It took people who thought they were safe from anything, right? Yeah, rioting and looting. But people who are senators may feel like they're usually very safe. But it took their safety, the safety of these so-called important people, to be threatened, for them to be like, "Oh crap, we got to do something." You know what I mean? If this was just rioting in the streets, Twitter would be like, meh, you know? Facebook would be like, well, this is a fraudulent post, yeah, but there's would this be
is,
no suspension.
This is a warning message and that's all you get. I think right. That's certainly part of it. Like, this is... They basically, Trump is now directly, there's a line you can directly draw to him inciting people attacking politicians and very important people. We've seen this, I mean, throughout the year too, right? Because, hey, a group of Trump supporters and extremists plan to kidnap the governor of Michigan, right? So there has been a lot of this. I do wonder why. I do think it's a little too late for both these social media companies, especially because Twitter is boosted by Trump support. Here's the thing. Like, even though most of his content is toxic and he riles up, you know, a very extreme base of people, it's good for Twitter because it's more engagement. And it's engagement for Twitter. It's engagement for Facebook and Instagram. And that's all these companies care about. I do wonder, now that the Capitol building has been attacked by a very online group of people, you know, it's a group of people who, it seems like they got there with no clear message. Here's the thing, right? They were protesting the results of a fair and legal election, but they didn't have any other statement beyond that, right? So they got into the Capitol building to take selfies and to stand for photo ops. And there are a lot of examples of this. Getty photographers took some great photos of these people just ransacking the Capitol. There were people who took photos of themselves in Nancy Pelosi's office. People stole mail from Pelosi's office. You know, they wrote graffiti on the walls of the Capitol, all for the online clout. And I feel like that's the main thing, right?
I think the funny thing for me was seeing the so I follow this Instagram account called Influencers in the Wild, where they just, you know, pictures of influencers doing their thing in the middle of the street or the road or whatever. And that, for all of yesterday when the coup happened, it was just people taking photos of other influencer wannabes in these offices in the Capitol. So it was just like clearly imposing, right? Like, why would you do that if not for fame and glory, I guess?
It's like you could see them, hey, please smash that like button and subscribe as I sit on, you know, the dais of the Capitol building. I'm saying right-wing extremists here, like, let's be clear. There were literal neo-Nazis invading the American Capitol. So you can see that too. Like, a lot of the folks, you can see the tattoos. These are people who are known within online communities for extreme right-wing views and neo-Nazi views. So this is where we are as a country. Let me just say, as all this was happening, I was definitely starting to think, like, maybe social media was a mistake. Maybe, you know, maybe this instant communication and the ability to instantly broadcast so much to an audience of millions, you know, and have it shared and retweeted so quickly, it does kind of bring out the worst in us. You know, human beings, we're social animals. This is what we are kind of built for. We come together, we tell stories. It's kind of how we survive and, you know, survive as a civilization. Social media has given us the ability to communicate at light speeds, to broadcast it in ways that we've never really seen before. You know, it's sort of like, I don't know if you ended up seeing Wonder Woman 1984, Sherlyn.
I did.
But the actual dumb plot of that movie is the supervillain taking advantage of
satellite
that will beam information. Not a huge spoiler here, but it's a satellite that's going to beam, you know, information right to everybody's TVs. And, oh man, isn't that a crazy supervillain plot? Except, no.
It's happening.
It's, we can all do it any time of the day from our phones. You make something viral, it'll get on national news, right? It'll be on all the social media platforms. We can do it. Anybody can do it right now. We're not really using that power for good most of the time, unfortunately.
And I think that we should put a finer point on this. Like, it was extremely online. Yes, Facebook and Twitter have a lot to answer for, but it was also the Donald refugee site when Reddit /TheDonald got banned. It's also 8kun, the place where all of the QAnon rumors really started. Do you remember that picture, all those pictures of that guy who looked like he stepped out of Skyrim? He is known as the QAnon shaman.
Yeah, the neo-Nazi Viking, by the way. Like, yeah. Yep.
So this is where we're at. It's not just Trump. It's not just Trump's tweets and Instagram posts. It's also the entire like QAnon conspiracy universe. It's the fact,
but which is based around him. Like he is the main character of these conspiracies, right?
I mean, he's the main character of them right now. In 2 months, is he going to continue to be the main character of them?
It's the wildest fan fiction going on right now is QAnon, which spun out of the Pizzagate conspiracy, but which was tied to kind of Trump's ideology and what his supporters wanted to believe. But anyway, let me just say, I woke up this morning to see the New York Times front page that said, Congress confirms Biden's win, defying mob attack. And that's just incredibly, like, that really just puts it into perspective. Because yesterday was supposed to be about confirming that presidency. And also, hey, I'm in Georgia. And there were two really, really crucial elections here. And both Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff won their seats, giving Democrats, you know, control of the Senate and everything. So there was a lot to celebrate yesterday. And instead, what we're talking about is, you know, whining online people rioting and looting and attacking the Capitol building and police not really doing much about it. So I just feel really sad, but we're going to talk about gadgets and fun stuff. Take our minds off of it.
This is literally what yesterday was supposed to be about, which is all my CS prep work. And then everything happened. And well, I guess not. And this podcast itself was interrupted because we wanted to talk just about CES today. It'd be like all gadget chat. Yeah. And
this is
going to
be an easy episode, right? Because we're tired and we're just going to,
we know what we're going to talk about.
We're just going to preview what's up. But anyway, like clearly there's a lot happening right now. And I think the very online nature of these, I don't even want to call them protests. Like these are riots. Like these are, you know, instigated group mob things happening here. It's only going to get worse, which is also what worries me. So, you know, I think what I'd recommend for a lot of people is stay tuned to our reporting. I hope you're reading news from, you know, accurate, truthful sources. I think one publication that's been doing a great job throughout the pandemic and certainly throughout Trump's presidency is The Atlantic. And I think find sources that are accurate, find sources that actually teach you something, because I think even when you're a smart, well-read person, you probably have something to learn about these communities, which you may not be paying attention to. But I think it is worth acknowledging like how online this is. And yeah, we'll keep an eye on the story. It's going to be ongoing and moving for a while, but let's move on to CES because that's something we actually know about. One more thing, folks, that actually just dropped as we were recording this episode is an announcement from Mark Zuckerberg that he is blocking Trump's access to his Facebook and Instagram accounts indefinitely. It's weird language because it's he says specifically, we are extending the block we have placed on his Facebook and Instagram accounts indefinitely and for at least the next 2 weeks until the peaceful transition of power is complete. So it really sounds like this is more of a 2-week ban to get us to the point where Biden is president, which is just a wild thing to be considering. But
this sounds like more of a stand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a slightly longer suspension. I think there's one statement in here that I think is really this is the most forceful thing I think we've ever seen from Zuckerberg, but he says his decision to use his platform to condone rather than condemn the actions of his supporters at the Capitol building has rightly disturbed people in the U.S. and around the world. We removed these statements yesterday because we judged that their effect and likely their intent would be to provoke further violence. And then he goes on to say that, you know, they have allowed Trump to be on their platforms while removing posts, but the context now is just fundamentally different. So this is the strongest move we've ever seen Facebook take against anybody. I wonder if Twitter's going to follow up. Any thoughts here, Sherlyn?
Same thing that I've already said, which is it took a bunch of men and women in suits, much of men and women in power for someone like Zuckerberg to feel
mostly
threatened
white
enough
men and women. Yeah.
To do this. So I appreciate that it's they're finally taking a more forceful stand, and maybe Twitter will follow suit. We don't know. Twitter has been traditionally a bit faster than Facebook at doing things like that.
Yeah,
but we'll see. You never know. But they might take an even more forceful stand. Who knows?
It's crazy that even as we're recording this episode, the story keeps going and gets even wilder. But yeah, stay tuned. We'll be following all this in Gadget and certainly talking more about it on the show. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to something maybe a little lighter, a little more fun. Let's talk about our CES preview. One thing I really like about CES is that it is sort of a preview of the year ahead, and it's become more and more the TV show, and this year is no different, and Samsung kind of kicked things off. We have several stories from Samsung already. They are bringing micro LED TVs to mainstream consumers, and we don't know the pricing or availability for these things, but I think that is a crucial thing for them because they're taking this technology, which they first showed off with the wall TV. I think they announced that two or three years ago. This is technology that basically brings tiny, tiny little LEDs on a per pixel basis on a display. So basically doing what OLED does to give you really great contrast and very dark black levels, because it's not like these things need backlighting. All these individual pixels are going to be LEDs and they can be turned on or off. And this is sort of the holy grail of TV technology. The wall was cool, but it was not anything that somebody would actually buy, right? They took this technology. It was for custom installers. It was for like big corporate offices. I think as of last year, when people tried to spec out like, oh, what if I want to configure the 146-inch version of the wall? You're basically buying these tiny panels, each of which costs like $16,000. And by the time you put that together, you have a TV that is costs over $300,000. That's not something for everybody. So what they're doing now is, and the other thing about the wall and micro LED, they came in these panels that had to be connected sort of like Lego blocks, right? Yep. Like it's expandable, it's modular.
It's modular,
Now they're announcing these new sets in 88 inches, 99, and 110 inches that are going to be pre-configured from the factory. So they're going to be basically just self-contained boxes. Like when you buy a normal TV, you take it out of the box, you can mount it on the wall, do it all yourself, probably with some help because these are big screens. So you'll probably need like some friend's help or something. And these are TVs that are so thin, they're meant to be mounted on the wall. They're going to be selling a stand separately. But what's key is they're micro LED tech. It's kind of Samsung is bringing it down more to mainstream consumers. But again, very, very rich mainstream consumers, right? We don't have pricing or anything yet on these, but let me tell you, the 8K, you know, 88-inch LG OLED right now, which is sort of like the perfect TV, the one if you had unlimited money and a ton of space on your wall you'd want to put up, that thing costs $30,000. So I would imagine these sets would be at least that or more. Yeah.
I actually managed to see the micro LED TV, like 110-inch version at Samsung's preview event here in New York.
Oh, yeah. You went to a physical event. Yeah. Amazing.
Samsung had a whole thing where they had a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, seeing the QLED TV, I mean, that's the thing with the difficulty of CES being a virtual show is because, like we said, it's a big TV, TV set and TV technology
show.
You have
to see them. Yeah.
You really have to see it for yourself. But I was able to, and I can tell, I mean, they didn't want us to take any, you know, pictures or whatever of it because it was
let me just tell you, Samsung kind of screwed our plans for covering this micro LED TV, right? Because we read about it, right? We saw their news and we're like, oh, this is cool. This is your cooling technology, right? Everybody's going to want to see what micro LED is all about. And we get there that day. And I think overnight, Samsung in Korea was just like, no video, no photos.
Yeah, entirely.
It was news to everybody. It kind of stank.
The setup in the demo area basically for the micro LED was in this really dark corner where they had blackout curtains and everything. So, I mean, the effect was really good. It was as if you were in their really dark booth at CES as well. Sure. So, yeah, of course, I was like fascinated by it and I got up close and I was like, my face had to be like right up against the panel to see pixels and that sort of thing. And it looks really good. But like you said, the whole point of this is to the fact that it's now going to be available to consumers. And the key like thing we need to know with that is the price. And that's not something
and the
that
price. Yeah,
Samsung's
it's more if you have to ask, you don't want to like you can't afford it. I think that's where the price is going to come down. Expect this to cost the amount, you know, of a car or something. So, again, not for not for everybody, but
not
I do
for most
think,
people just yet.
For like a super rich person who didn't want to go through the headache of setting up something with professional installers, because the wall, for all it was, right, the wall needed professional installation. And Samsung told me like that could take days, because somebody has to go connect the panels, make sure it all works together, make sure it's all synchronized. It's not the easiest experience. And Samsung isn't the only company doing this, by the way. Like Sony just announced their micro LED giant corporate screens, which are basically the same thing. And micro LED isn't the only thing we saw from Samsung, right? They talked about their new QLED TVs, Neo QLED, which are powered by mini LED backlights. So this is where TV tech gets really annoying and confusing, right? So there's micro LED, which is the, it is, it's not even quite the same as like LCD tech. It just kind of has that name, but micro is the smallest. It is the one that gets you lights on a per pixel basis. Mini LED is more like a traditional LCD screen, which has like backlight zones. And it used to be, and even for Samsung, it used to be like maybe 10 years ago, like in the early 2010s, most TVs had side lights around them, which is one reason why LCD TVs had, you know, issues with uniform lighting and black levels and everything, because you basically had like these spotlights, reading lights on the tops and sides of the screen. It never made things look very good. And back in the day, like 10 years ago, I was rocking a plasma TV because plasma didn't have this problem. Plasma was very uniform. It was kind of like the OLED of that time. Talk to any, you know, anybody into a home theater in the mid 2000s and early 2010s, like plasma was kind of where it was at. But now LED, LCD TVs are kind of getting better. Over the last couple of years, we've seen full array backlights, which means those lights were actually put behind the panels in specific zones, and the number of those backlights determined how good the contrast level was and the brightness was and the black levels were, because the more lights you have, the better a zone could be localized, right? So if you're looking at a scene with like a sun or a single bright light or something, if you don't have enough LEDs to light that spot up, you'll get this weird halo effect that just looks like, I don't know, like there's a ghost in this one portion of your screen. It doesn't look uniform. It doesn't look black enough. Mini LED are basically smaller backlights, which can give you thousands of potential areas to light up. And that basically gets you quality that's close to OLED at a much, much cheaper price. So I talked about this when I bought TCL's 8 series. That's a mini LED TV, actually one of the first on the market. I bought that thing for $1,000 at a 65-inch size, and it looks fantastic, and it looks like mini LED. Both Samsung and Sony, I know Sony's not doing this right now. Samsung is kind of getting into this. LG announced that some of their newer sets, their non-OLED sets, will also have mini LED as well. So that's kind of the state of TV right now. We're also seeing new OLEDs from LG and Sony as usual. Nothing really new there. It just seems like they're better OLEDs, you know. We're kind of at a standstill right now, but the real exciting tech in TVs is mini LEDs. I don't know, like based on what you saw, Sherlyn, what did you think of the Neo QLED sets?
I mean, so those weren't, you know, given that treatment, the way the micro LEDs were, where there's like a dark room, whatever, they're just like hung up on the wall.
Because they're bright. And, they're meant to be super bright.
And they look great. The lighting across it looked even, everything. I've been interested in QLED technology for a while since they first appeared on TVs and then now starting to make their way onto laptops. So, I mean, QLED screens are really great. I was more interested in some of the features that Samsung announced as well. One of them, which there's a whole bunch, and I won't get into all of them. The one that did catch my eye that, you know, led me to be like, oh, right, a separate story about this is the Samsung Health app, which launched last year on Samsung's TVs, is getting a new feature called Smart Trainer. And it basically uses an optional camera that you have to attach to analyze your form when you're working out with Samsung Health workout videos and also count your reps. So this is not a new concept, right? There's devices that do this, but not a lot of them use cameras just yet, and they're not very sophisticated. And Samsung Health Smart Trainer is also far from sophisticated at the moment. But, you know, it counted my jumping jacks quite correctly. It did, you know, like a lot of squats. It counted the squats fairly accurately, too. And the form, like, analysis is a little iffy because Brian O, our video producer who was there at the event, did a bunch of squats. Brian's like on top of his fitness. Brian's a squat
master. Yeah.
He's on top of his fitness. He knows what he's doing. And his form was great, but the the system was just like none of
these
are squats. The
system just could not keep up with Brian. I mean, I understand this. We don't have the technology for that. You know, it's funny you bring this up too, Shirlin, because the thing that seems to be really happening this year too is health tech that is directly visible on your TVs, right? You tested out Apple Fitness Plus and that is kind of the same thing. I want to try that because I have an Apple Watch, I have an Apple TV, and I kind of want something that'll help me get up and moving when I stop nursing the sprained ankle, you know, but that seems like a bigger thing happening this year. We'll talk about that. We'll talk
for
about
sure,
like, the
for
health
sure.
stuff
there's
coming.
There's plenty
too.
Of stuff we can talk about in health tech in a little bit, but there's
what
more
else from
Samsung.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's more from Samsung in addition to their TVs. Today, the company announced a new Galaxy Chromebook 2. Mm-hmm. I first laid eyes on the Galaxy Chromebook, the original one, last CES. Like, I missed a lot. But and it was this brilliant bright red Lamborghini style Chromebook where like I've never seen a Chromebook that good looking
all people
before.
All they had to do was make a bright red Chromebook and everyone's like, ooh, I'm a notorious
red.
Chromebook hater, so
it's, I know,
consider me not impressed. Yeah.
You don't have to be, but the original Chromebook was really good looking, very thin, very much in the aesthetic of a lot of Samsung's latest laptops, right? This really thin, minimal, clean look. But the issue with the original Galaxy Chromebook was that for some reason it had a 4K AMOLED.
It was a Chromebook, yeah.
Well, okay. But okay, 4K AMOLED screen. Yeah. And just like $999 starting price. Like the two things that Chromebooks don't need to be, high-end
don't
or expensive.
Yeah.
Like I get the Chromebook hate sometimes because it's not like something you should pay a lot of money for, but as like a budget laptop or whatever, that's where it makes a lot of sense.
They're great. Chromebooks are great under $500. I love Chromebooks there.
Absolutely.
Keep them there. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a trend towards like slightly more premium Chromebooks that are between the $500 and $600 price range, but that's another thing altogether. So what happened was with this year's Galaxy Chromebook, which is called the Chromebook 2, Samsung was like, we hear ya. You don't need a 4K AMOLED, we know. And we know $999 is a lot to swallow for a Chromebook. So they tweaked those two things. So now you're getting a QLED, like we talked about, a full HD QLED, same size, 13.3-inch like before. Mm-hmm. And then you have a... and the starting price is $550. But at that base level, you're getting an Intel Celeron processor as opposed to the original Chromebook, which was a Core i5, 10th generation Core i5. So a Celeron processor, I mean, for Chrome OS, not so bad, but if you want a bit more power, you can get the option with the Intel Core i3, which would be $700. So still expensive for a Chromebook and really goes toe-to-toe with the Pixelbook Ghost sort of pricing, except for the specs maybe a little bit different. But it's just a gorgeous, like, just beautiful Chromebook. I was still like, this is pretty.
What was the pricing again? Did they say?
What was the pricing for
the
$550 for the base model with Celeron and $700 for the i3 model?
That's better. That's better.
It is
this
much
is
better.
Where you should have started. Yeah.
Yes. The sad news for me is that unlike the original Chromebook, the Chromebook 2 doesn't have an S Pen on board. Like, usually there's a little dock for an S Pen. Yeah. And this one doesn't have it. But you know, I guess one of the trade offs you have to you have to swallow.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about a bunch more computer stuff, by the way, but let me just wrap up Samsung, because there were a couple other things we should mention, and TVs. 8K is a big thing this year, and we've talked about this before, too. Sony, LG, Samsung, I'm trying to think of who else, like any other big TV makers. 8K is the big thing. There is no 8K content, so I think like my main argument against that still stands, but I think what we are seeing is more TV companies doing better 8K upscaling. And I don't know if that's going to be super compelling to people, right? So it's going to be upscaling 1080p and 4K to 8K. The one argument I've heard from several companies is that, hey, listen, once our TVs get beyond 88 inches or something, you'll probably start to see the limits of 4K, right? And they may have a point there. I think once you get to like 100 inch screens and above, then okay, maybe you'll want those extra pixels to just give you a more realistic image. I don't know if I quite buy that argument, though, just because, hey, if you have a when we were going to theaters, you know, we were looking at theater screens, most of those were 4K projector screens. And if you can see, you know, a 30-foot tall 4K image and be just fine with it, I think a 100-inch, you know, 4K in your home would also be fine. So, yeah, there's that. That's what's happening. We'll see more from TVs this year. But, Sholin, what's up? What's else is happening in computers?
So, yeah. Right. So we talked about the Galaxy Chromebook. There's all kinds of computers. Again, CES is traditionally a TV show, but there's also always a ton of laptops. So also announced already today, Lenovo is updating a whole slew of IdeaPads. And usually the company also has like staggered, you know, news announcement dates. So I'm sure we can expect more from Lenovo. And usually this is where the flagship ThinkPad line gets a refresh. So the ThinkPad X1 series is a very popular line with people, with a lot of people. I think some people also have a love-hate relationship with it, like me. You know, we can expect, I think we can expect some updates on that front. Today's announcements from Lenovo include a 5G laptop that is, you know, like, all right, thanks, with the Snapdragon 8CX. Not the Gen 2, but the Snapdragon 8CX, the older 2018 chip. Which, again, we've gone on this podcast about Windows on ARM, but you know, it's not letting up, right? Like, companies are going to keep making them, even if they have to use older chipsets. It's fine.
That's disappointing, though. Yeah.
It is slightly disappointing. We haven't seen these
especially
in
after
person.
We saw Apple's M1 hardware, right? Which is just like, goddamn, those chips are blowing away every like PC hardware right now. And to be running 2-year-old Snapdragons, like,
I want to say that like the IdeaPad 5G was probably in development for a while now. Like Apple announced the M1, they couldn't be like, well, should we hold this? So that's that. But the thing is also like a lot of the IdeaPads announced today aren't going to be available in the US yet. There's also a new Yoga all-in-one. And I know you know all-in-ones quite well, Dev. So does this sound interesting to you? The Yoga all-in-one 27 is a 27-inch AIO that can... flip. It has a hinge that can flip it from horizontal to vertical.
Which is so kind of the trend this year, I guess.
It's a trend.
I don't know.
It's a huge trend. I mean, last year, I think Samsung did this, not the Serif TV, but it had
the
Ciro, thank you.
Ciro.
That could also do that. So this is like a similar take, except for it's the all-in-one. You can cast it as all-in-one screen.
I don't know why you'd want that on a PC is the thing. Like, I actually know people who use vertical monitors, and it's useful if you're like working in web development or something or programming, you usually have that, you know, portrait monitor right next to a normal landscape monitor. So it's usually like a second or third display for people.
Right. So maybe they don't have a lot of space. Yeah. Maybe they don't have a lot of room. So you want one screen. There's also software that allows you to cast your, you know, mobile articles this screen. So maybe you want to see it, you know, how it looks on a bigger screen, that sort of thing. And Lenovo promised that a future update will basically turn these things into like smart TVs so that they can play, you know, TV shows directly from apps without having to go through a browser or whatever, which cool. Rely on
Did
Windows.
They make this thing just for Quibi.
Yeah, poor Quibi. Maybe the
it would
Ciro
have been the perfect
was supposed
service
to be.
For it. Yeah.
But there have been so many other laptops. I mean, I know the embargoes are sort of drip feeding out. I would suggest the viewer and the listener keep an eye on Engadget.com all throughout this week and next. Because I can keep the days straight for myself. That's all.
It's fine. We're all busy and crazy. Like, we're all bone tired right now. Let's talk about some broader things, though, because I think what you can expect from all the computers you're seeing this week and next week is new hardware. And we don't know what that new hardware is going to be, but we know Intel has, you know, a press conference set up. AMD is going to be doing a keynote and a press conference as usual. NVIDIA is always a big presence at CES. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some new chips, some new GPUs, at least new mobile GPUs, because NVIDIA is kind of waiting. Like, come on. Like, we know. They just launched the 3000 RTX series on desktop. We're just waiting for them to hit mobile. So that's probably going to be coming at some point. So you can really look forward to all that. My main advice to everybody looking at computer stuff, do not don't buy a computer right now, because if you wait a couple weeks and you see what's new and what's coming, maybe the computer you want will actually drop in price as the newer model is going to be available. So, you know, keep an eye on that. I think one good thing about going to CES, Sherlyn, is that we get to see the new weird stuff, right? Like foldable PCs and dual screen PCs.
Dude,
what are you expecting? Because we can't talk about like embargoed stuff, but on a general level, are you expecting to see more foldable PCs, especially after the Lenovo thing you reviewed?
That's the whole thing, right? Like usually a show at like CES is where people bring their more daring concepts to the event to show people things in real life. But because so much doesn't translate without, you know, through Zoom or whatever, people, I think companies are being more cautious about that. So I personally, I'm not sure we'll be able to see that many wacky and wild things unless, I mean, all we're going to maybe see is a teaser video maybe, or like, I don't think that there's a lot of companies also that are ready to give foldable, you know, a go again.
Yeah.
Just because the ThinkPad X1 Fold just proved that there's still so much to be, you know, worked on. And Microsoft, you know, I think they're waiting on Microsoft to do something with Windows 10X, right? So
yeah, and Microsoft already announced Windows 10X won't be just for dual screens at first, but that hasn't launched yet, and we don't know what they're going to do with that. We're in a weird holding pattern right now. I think that's kind of the thing and the way we're at. I'm also, let me just tell you guys, like, I've seen some weird stuff just previewed concept-wise from companies, and so much of it is just like, did you just, like, draw something on a napkin? Just feed me this as a concept device, because this is ridiculous. So we're going to be talking, that's next week's conversation.
So,
because, yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that.
I mean, okay, so I'm just right now double checking that the embargo on something lifted, because I'm pretty sure, but it is pretty wild. And yeah, so it's called the LaVie Mini. It's one of Lenovo's partnered with NEC, and they came out with this line called LaVie. And so that started like sort of last year. The LaVie Mini is like a netbook style device, right? It's like a little laptop and it's almost chunky, but it's cute. But you can also add like controllers to the side to turn it kind of into like a Switch. And then you can prop it up so that it's sort of standing like a smart display. This thing takes a lot of forms.
That's cute. I can dig that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept. Again, Lenovo isn't one to shy from wild concepts. And to be fair, this isn't just Lenovo, but I like that the company is still trying to do these interesting things. You can check out all about the LaVie Mini on our site. It's on Engadget.com.
It's very cute. I just feel like, because we also saw some concepts from Dell last year, right? Where
we saw one
that was just the like Alienware. A giant, it was a mini PC that looked like a giant Switch in your hand. And I just don't. It's more like, I don't think Windows can handle these concepts yet, and Microsoft really has to like step up when it comes to making Windows more flexible and more usable on a lot of different form factors. Yeah,
I just love that the LaVie Mini is like a 2021 device, but reminds me of 1999. I'm just like,
it's very 1999. Yeah, it reminds me of those, like, I remember watching anime in the late 90s, and people would have all these like Sony and NEC little mini like laptop things, like a Vio thing that looked like was a 5-inch mini computer. It's like, oh, that's the future. I want to live there.
Yeah,
and yeah, let's go back. Let's go back to that. Dual screen computers. That's a thing. I think that was more of a reality last year. We're still waiting for the Surface Neo to come out. We don't know what other companies are going to be doing yet. Asus is usually big on this. Like, we've reviewed the ZenBooks with the special screen that's underneath that. So maybe we'll see more of that this year. And I feel like just Asus has been doing a good job compared to everybody else.
So
hopefully they'll get better and refine their stuff. Yeah.
And that does also remind me of the Intel Technology Open House we usually go to at CES, where they show off their wilder concepts. And without the pressure of an open house like that, I think the companies are more like, oh, I guess we don't have to show anything. So maybe that's why. But so we shouted out Lenovo, we shouted out Asus, but there's plenty of more laptop companies and PC companies, right? So I'm waiting to hear more. I mean, some of them have already some news that's gone up, like Dell has had some early news go up. There's HP to look out for. There's Acer to look out for. These companies usually have a presence. And then we have all gaming laptop brands that usually have big boosts there.
Like normal laptops, right? Like consumer laptops. And next week, or like businessy, I think especially... Yeah. after NVIDIA's press conference, we'll probably see a lot of gaming laptops hit the streets. So
right, it's gonna be exciting because year. A little yeah. behind the scenes, the companies like to wait till they can name the chipset and publicly yeah. tell you the names of the chip, you know, and when they announce their news. So they'll wait till the chip maker does their announcement and then they can follow up and say, hey, we got it too. So definitely stay tuned for that stuff.
For sure. So listeners, if you're excited about anything we've been talking about, TVs, computers, send us a message at podcast@engadget.com and let us know if there's anything we should focus on for next week's episode, which is going to be our big CES episode. And we're actually going to record that early on Wednesday because it's going to be part of our live show. We're doing this huge like live video stream Engadget. So, you know, keep an eye on our YouTube channel. You could just tune in and get a lot of great CES content like streamed right to you. It's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to doing this.
Same.
Let's move on to other stuff we're expecting at CES. I think every year, more and more, it's becoming more of a health tech and a wearable show. I know this is really your jam, Sherlyn. Like, any thoughts about what we can see this year?
Yeah, so as before, as for the last 8 years now, I think Engadget continues to be the judge of the official Best of CES award. And we're all assigned categories to take care of. And within my jurisdiction is things like wearables and health tech. So the last few years have been like growing. And there was like a few years ago that wearables was like this hot thing that everyone was like, this is a wearable. I'm like, and now it's just everything is a wearable, right? Like me and Valentina, who are going to help judge the nominees for best wearables, were like, she was asking me, she was like, so what do you think? You know, none of the, you know, a lot of companies that we usually see wearables from save their news for later in the year around Baselworld, which is the watch show.
Baselworld.
And so I was just like, I was telling her, don't worry, honey, because you'll see there will be all kinds of wearables. And not surprisingly, I've already seen, like publicly even announced, like face masks. Right? Didn't we think this is the CES that face masks are going to be the hot new wearable? We're going to see, I mean, LG already announced one with like what looks like air conditioners built
in. But specifically like active face masks, right? Like not just cloth, but active face masks. You have to charge. Yes, they have filtration and lights and all sorts of crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yes. The LG one that I'm talking about was announced like earlier in 2020 and it came with a built-in fan and with purifiers and air purifiers and stuff like that. That looks bulky as hell. Now we're seeing things that are a little slimmer, sleeker, with still what looks like fans. And then some of them do things like they'll display a smile in front of the mask.
Oh my God. We already knew 2020 was our, you know, giant leap into dystopian future. But right now we are just living out Terry Gilliam's Brazil. Because in that movie, there would be like oxygen tanks around and older folks would sometimes need fresh air so that you could go check in to survive in your polluted city. It seems like, man, we are just getting there. I'll tell you guys, there's something I will talk about next week, but one of the wildest gadgets I've ever seen is an active face mask. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm kind of down with this, like especially hopefully we'll all have access to vaccines, you know, throughout 2021. Like hopefully that's something everybody will be able to get and, you know, we'll be able to tamp down this pandemic. But until then, I will certainly be wearing masks everywhere. And I think even during every flu season,
after,
right? Like,
right.
Let's make masks a common thing.
Next CES, I'm definitely still wearing a mask.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. If we're traveling to CES, which is already a dangerous event, like CES flu is a real thing. I am definitely going to be wearing a mask. But by then, maybe you'll want a mask that has like a clear, transparent front so people can see your lips and see your smile, or something that lights up so people can see your lips at night for accessibility. So,
Yeah,
that'll be cool.
But I mean, okay, so back to wearables really quickly just to finish that out. In addition to masks, my point was trying to say that like you never think of what can be a wearable. It could be a t-shirt, it could be a sock, it could be something like 2 years ago there were wearable breast pumps that won the best wearable of CES. So I'm actually just waiting to be surprised and delighted with the best wearables category. But health tech is going to be big too. I mean, it's always been big. I've seen the weirdest things out of the health tech section at, in Vegas in the past where like there was this like pill you could swallow and then it would stay in your system and monitor your temperature and send that to your doctor, that sort of thing. And I forget the exact name of the product, but there's stuff like that. But there's also the explosion of home fitness tech. So I'm expecting to see more stuff there too. But for now, we're just in a wait and see mode with a lot of these smaller product categories, smaller than our usual like laptops and TVs, Beats too. Another thing that I usually like to see at CES, which I rarely get to cover when, you know, in my day-to-day, is beauty tech. Beauty tech usually also somehow appears at CES. So brands like L'Oreal or Schwarzkopf, I think that might be a L'Oreal brand. Lots of beauty brands also want a piece of the action. Like CES is the one year where every other industry wants in on tech. So they come in and they show their stuff. So I might not be able to see as much of these as I like this year, but I'm still excited to see that. And then finally, I think, you know, it's high time that accessibility got a lot more attention. And I think, and CES has traditionally had some accessibility products to, you know, being announced and launched. There have been wheelchairs, motorized wheelchairs in the past too. And I'm also just excited to check out that category. That's also one of the categories for the Best of CES Awards, which is Best for Accessibility. So those are the things that I'm keeping my eyes out for and really hopeful about.
Are those the only things?
I mean,
there's other stuff. Yeah,
they're not the only things, but they're the surprise. They're the like things you don't typically think about in my day to day like line of work.
Let me just say, throughout 2020, a lot of us have been you know, cordoned off from people. Things are kind of lonely, you know. Maybe just need some help, you know. And so, I think
okay.
What
got
are we getting
you
to here?
So last year was the first year the CTA officially was like, yes, sex tech can display at the show. And then this year it's like such a weird show. I don't really know what the guidelines are there, but I'm also, you know, pretty sure we'll see plenty of sex tech announcements across CES 2021 from smart vibrators.
Zoom plugins for all your sex tech. Ooh, like, let's just combine all
get
that
imaginative
together.
Yeah. I mean, that's not to say that, okay, so companies like Linus, I mean, Linus made this biosensing dildo vibrator, sure. And I think there will be updates there, I'm hoping. And Oh My Bod tends to show up too. And then there's things like Teledildonics that have already sort of been in development for a while. It's not like a new thing to us. But, you know, we'll probably see more of them designed for like time, like this these pandemic times. We'll need all of this, you know, to keep us going, to keep things juicy. So there's that to look forward to, too. I don't know, maybe some people
CES
are.
CES is, remember CES used to run alongside the AVN Awards, the Adult Video Awards. So that was like a weird cross-section of people that would just be in the same
adult
buildings.
Video show, yeah.
Yeah. And now it's just kind of fully come over. So, hey, that's cool. More power to you. One thing I really like about CES, by the way, is like we often just confront weird stuff, you know, weird new stuff. I think that's going to be part of the things I miss, you know, just going to the show and running into things. But is there anything weird you're expecting or have seen so far, Sherlyn?
Man, I always think things are going to get strange and then people surprise me and get even stranger. So
yeah.
Stranger things. I don't know yet. I really, either I'm under embargo or I just don't know, you know, so.
We don't know. Well, let me ask you this, because I think every year, when I first started going to CES, I was very excited, right? I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to be covering, you know, the latest and greatest in tech. My first CES was a goddamn nightmare. Like my editor booked me at this seedy motel that was on the strip. It was really gross. I was there too long. I didn't know, like, I should try to be using cabs to get everywhere because Las Vegas is a terrible city for actual transportation. So I was walking most places. It was just not great. But over time, I've learned to appreciate the joys of CES, specifically like actually being able to work with the Engadget team and see everybody, you know, see everybody from the UK and Richard Lai from Hong Kong. And we don't always get to see the entire team, and actually being able to experience these things in person. It's sort of like, you know, you go to this thing and then for the rest of the year, you're like, okay, yeah, I saw this crazy AKTV in January. I kind of know, I have more context about what's happening in June or September or something. So we're not going to have that this year. It's just straight news. Do you feel like you've missed anything?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my friends. So yeah, I was just thinking this right before the coup started. I was thinking, like, I thought I missed CES. I thought what I missed was, I missed CES, but minus the work, minus all of that hands-on and show floor stuff. I just want to see all the people, eat all the food, hang out all the time, go to parties. And I just realized that all I want is for us to have, like, a week-long party with no work and just all kinds of hanging out and good food and good times. So I'm hopeful that once things are safe again, we can throw a days-long party that's just no work and everyone just hangs and it'll be fun.
Just hangs. Like, let's just hangs. Yeah, live stream the hang. We'll all play Among Us. It'll be really chill. Yes. And we could just relax.
Yeah, hopefully this will probably be like 2 or 3 years down the road. But just want to get everybody in Vegas again. I'll just throw this, like, the Sherlyn show. Sherlyn Con. Or Sherlyn the... Gun. Tech Share Friends Con, ShareCon, and let's all go party and let's all have fun.
I miss the weird stuff too, by the way. Like, you know, Vegas is a weird town, but when you combine it with the budgets of these companies and they sort of like thirst to make people pay attention to what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
We did the Westworld dinner last year.
Yes, which that was so fun.
It was a fancy, weird dinner that was promo for the next season of Westworld, but it was also like, you know, it was run by this marketing company that looked at our social media accounts and, you know, kind of knew things about us and put us in groups. And like, it was a weird test of like tech that would make it easier for you to be at a party, right? For you to just have conversations with people. We talked about this during last CES. We had some great episodes during the last CES, so be sure to go back and listen to those older episodes.
Are you going to miss this,
Sherlyn?
Yeah, listen to those episodes for the nostalgia of like a traditional going places, CES.
Yeah.
That was the last real proper CES that we had. So definitely go back to that. But I mean, yes, I was saying I missed the Westworld dinner. I miss hanging out in the trailer. I mean, okay, so we usually get into this like contentious debate with the entire Engadget team when we're deciding the best of CES awards. And usually I don't miss that. Usually I'm like, I don't need to have that kind of drama in my life. But I actually kind of miss that. So you're like,
I miss the trailer. Listen, yes. The trailer is better than my first couple CESs where I was just like a vagabond, just like trying to find space wherever I could walk. And like, oh, this corner of this convention center looks good. I'm just going to sit in this poor corner and like try to, you know, go to those gross convention bathrooms. Yeah. So
or like press rooms. I do miss like going into a press room and nice, seeing random people that I know, that sort of thing. That's how you make friends in the industry too. And it's nice.
We miss, it turns out as social beings, we miss being social. So that's a shame. That's a shame. Yeah. Well, we'll wrap up on our CS stuff right now. Check in next week. Look at Engadget for all of our CS news. It's going to be... my fingers are already hurting. Like, it definitely feels like I'm at CES. There was one point where I was up at like 2 or 3 a.m. just writing embargoes. Like, oh, yeah, this is CES. This is still happening. But at least we're not going to be, I'm trying not to work over next weekend because CES used to be almost like a 2 week thing where we work through the weekends and everything. So
I do miss that like weekend window right before the show kicks off, but we're already in Vegas.
Yeah.
No, but we're all already in Vegas and like, oh, I'll save all my work to the weekend so that I would just do it all day and not have to worry. Like, that was my last minute, like 11th hour work the whole weekend in Vegas.
I mean, that's one way to do it. I always took that being like, we're in Vegas for 2 days and we could just like not do anything. And that's pretty fun. Turns out it's nice having a civilization, and I hope we can get back to that sometime.
Hopefully 2022.
Okay, so what have we been working on? This is a stupid question, right?
Duh.
Like, so normally we want to update you guys on everything we've been working on because it may not always tie into the main, you know, subject of the show, but it's all CS all the time over here, and that's going to be true for next week as well, unless you have anything you want to add, Sherlyn.
Can't think of anything other than CS, honestly. People it's hitting me up in my inbox, I'm just like, CES, bye. Yeah.
One thing I quickly want to mention, we will have some news around Sundance, the film festival, which is going to be doing a virtual festival like everyone else this year. But there's something cool and new they're doing, so I'm going to write up a story about that. Be sure to check that out on Engadget.
Oh, I mean, I'm also reviewing I'm testing the Amazon Halo. I'm not entirely sure if we're going to properly review it just yet, but... You know, it's been interesting, the insight it's delivered so far.
Been wearing the Halo for a couple of days now, Sherlyn. I am just wondering, how many tone warnings are you getting?
I mean, so here's the thing. It doesn't warn you about your tone. You just go into the app and kind of look at the tone section.
Passive aggressively tells you, like, you could have been nicer there.
So
you could have been less mean to Devendra there.
According to this app, right? So far this today, I've been mostly positive. I've been 11% cheerful and like, you know, 11% content, but 4% frustrated and 4% like.
Does it give you a timeline for when you've been frustrated?
It sort of has these like notable moments where you can sort of
showing something to the stream.
I'm trying
screen
to
right
show,
now,
show
which is
you
not
guys.
Great for audio, yeah. But
so for example,
it is
right
cool.
now is. Showing me like at 11:10 a.m., which is like 7 mm-hmm. minutes ago, I sounded amused, friendly, or happy. Mm. But at midnight, just past midnight, I was annoyed. Apparently, well, duh. So
well, duh. Why? Mm. My question is, why would you even build this technology? I don't think you need to know the points where you feel. Anyway,
Amazon believes your mood is a big indicator of your internal like mental well-being. So
it's true.
Sure, but so far my biggest issue is that it doesn't feel very accurate, and it also doesn't feel. I just like what are you talking about? Friendly?
What
when
was
I friendly?
Me?
And it doesn't yeah. show you the exact thing you said so that you can refer yet. So I think
I don't think having
tricky.
All the information is always helpful, right? Because it yeah. actually will frustrate you more. Because then you're like, what do you mean I sounded frustrated or annoyed? Who was I talking to then? Did I hurt
right.
their feelings? Like, it's just...
Right. Apparently,
it's just
last,
a whole load.
Apparently, last night, there were 5 instances where I was annoyed or frustrated, but I literally said no
Does
words.
Does it time up to when I was slacking you overnight?
Could have been. But I didn't even say anything. I didn't speak out loud. So it's just interesting what it decided, what it picked up on, you know? Maybe the TV was playing. Maybe I thought it was
the TV.
But anyway,
okay.
after
okay.
CES, I will hopefully get to work on that. So
that's cool. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What are you watching? What do you want to shout out here?
Other than Psych and Firefly, which I've been telling you about already.
Firefly's good. I want to rewatch Firefly
well,
now.
Well, actually, you know, you're going to be disappointed in me. This is why I keep my picks a secret from you, because I want to
well,
see your
reaction. Well, you like your garbage
like...
shows, and then when you get, like, you know, a steak, you're like, I don't know what to do with this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't really quite like Firefly all that much. I know heresy, but...
it's been 20 years, so I know how to deal with people in Firefly.
So when it comes to picks for this show, I try again. Some listeners already know. I try to be to find something less mainstream and you know a bit more obscure, so that it's actually something you don't already know is good, right? But this maybe you saw trending in Netflix's top 10 over the holidays. But I had just finished Sweet Home. It's this Korean horror series on Netflix. And it's about this apartment complex in a part of Korea. And it's like a rundown, like on the socioeconomic ladder, mm-hmm. it's a lot lower on the scale, sort of development. And it's there's some kind of pandemic that turns people into monsters. And it's based on the webtoon. This is the live action series that I'm talking about. It's based on the webtoon. Mm-hmm. The webtoon itself was really well received. I don't know if you heard about it before, Devendra.
I don't think so.
Sweet Home.
No.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's basically this idea that everyone's, you know, if you get infected, you should start to show symptoms like nosebleeds and whatever. And then in the window before you fully turn into a monster. And these monsters are very creative, by the way. They're like a cross between Resident Evil and, I don't know, like The Strain. But anyway, before you turn fully into a monster, there's this period of time called the golden hour where you're invincible, where you like are human still, but you recover from all wounds. You're basically Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. They basically made like a post-apocalyptic like RPG into a TV show.
Yeah, sort of, basically. Like. Yeah. it sounds sort of like that. So there's a lot of really interesting characters. Obviously, I mean, people, again, who listen to this podcast know I love watching like Korean horror and science fiction.
Have you seen Train to Busan Peninsula yet?
I haven't seen Peninsula because I don't think it's out on digital streaming
yet. It's out. Okay. I bought it. I've had it in my folder for like a couple of months now. Yeah.
Yeah. The reviews for that weren't that great. I don't know exactly when I'm going to watch it, but hopefully soon after CES. But Sweet Home, I think if you like a good monster flick, that's very different than it has Walking Dead vibes sometimes, just because of like the human element to it, but lots more action in terms of monsters and very interesting creatures too. Like there's monsters that don't kill. What's up with that?
This is fun.
I want you to check it out, Devendra, and tell me what you think.
I mean, I have to see the other thing. What was the Korean zombie show?
Kingdom. I can't wait for Kingdom
to
come
back
for a second season. Definitely that one first. Yes, that one's really, really good.
There's so many great genre shows. I want to shout out, listen, after yesterday, I need a little bit of comfort food or something, because the state of this country is just really worrying me. I finally decided to catch up on the Steven Universe movie. And Steven Universe is a show I've loved for a long time. And the movie, the original series, and Future, the final season, they're all on HBO Max right now. So good time to get into it. Steven Universe is a fantastic show. And as somebody who grew up, you know, loving anime, I love the fact that we have these creators now, like Rebecca Sugar, who grew up watching Sailor Moon and Akira and Utena and everything, and have built their own, you know, animated mythologies that constantly reference those things. This is a show about a young kid who has super gem powers because his mother, his late mother, was like a space gem, and she was part of like a race of people who would travel the universe and colonize planets and whatnot. And it is, I think, the most inclusive show I've ever seen. It's kind of a musical. Like, there's always music happening. And the movie is actually straight up a musical. It's actually, it's a sing-along, too, because they give you the lyrics and everything. They do, like, the bopping thing. So
I miss karaoke.
I think that's really fun. Yeah. You miss karaoke?
Yeah. I would try this show for that.
I mean, I think you'd like the show too, just because it's about people learning to be nice with each other and learning to deal with their emotions. It is a very mature and inclusive show that I love so much.
Oh,
it's
also mature and inclusive.
Yes. Yeah, it's fun. It's funny. I like the characters. The cast is actually diverse too. Like, there's just so much going on. But the movie, I think, was there were 5 seasons of the original show, and it ended in a way that was huge and dramatic and had like universe changing implications. And the movie is just like this nice little thing that is still reckoning with the past. But the music is fantastic. It is like, you know, it's the level of something you'd find on like Broadway or something. Actually, they brought in a major singer as a sort of voice of the villain. She's animated in the style of like a 1920s, 1930s cartoon. So she looks like, you know, one of those early Mickey cartoons with just like the weird loopy lines, and she's like basically circles her actual character design. And seeing that fit into the universe, the world of Steven Universe, is really, really cool and really fantastic. So if you want something good in your life, if you want to just feel a little better, check out Steven Universe. If you haven't seen it before, the movie's great. And Future, Steven Universe, it's so wholesome. And Future is the final season. I'm going to keep going with that too, because I hear that is fantastic. And I just love it. I love that we have creators out there making things like Avatar: The Last Airbender and this, who are, you know, American creators, but are so inspired by the anime that came before them, and also are using, you know, animation studios in Korea, which that's where most anime is actually, you know, produced right now. So it is a great like cross-cultural thing. And if you like anime, you haven't checked out Steven Universe before, it's all on HBO Max, so go check it out.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at the / Filmcast at /film.com. Check out our Patreon. We actually just did our top 10 of 2020 episode, and I think you'd all be really surprised at my number one, but they're all movies you should be watching, so go check that out.
If you want to send me your request to be invited to SureCon 2023 any monster ideas for Sweet Home, you can hit me up on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, because that'll really help. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. I was just thinking this right before the coup started. I was thinking, like,